Hello and welcome along to the RTÉ Rugby Podcast, the first podcast of this week. As I said last week, we are stepping it up to two pods per week for the Autumn Nations series. So we'll be back on Thursday as well. Four games this month for Ireland, starting with New Zealand on Friday. What a way to kick things off at the Aviva Stadium. Then Argentina, Fiji and Australia to come over the next few weeks as well. So a lot of rugby to get through over the next few weeks. Johnny Holland is with us this morning as we look ahead to the All Blacks game on Friday night. Johnny, how are you? This is a nice way to kick off a big month.
Yeah, it's a lot of rugby to be played, isn't there? So it's a lot to look forward to. And extra podcasts, isn't there? So we're chatting more often.
Everyone's stepping up their performances over the next few weeks. But like on Ireland, there's not much to be said about, you know, this weekend. There's a rivalry now that's been there for a good few years at this stage. There's plenty of narratives, the bitterness from Ireland after the World Cup last year, a bit of redemption to be had. Although I'm sure the players would say there's no revenge isn't on our minds whatsoever. It never seems to be. Then you've all the Johnny Sexton, Rico Ioane stuff, which has just been a nice little extra bit of spice and on top of it. Friday night game. Atmosphere, you know, is always going to be good at one of those. Although, for the others around the country, I will stand up for them and say that a lot of people obviously aren't happy with a Friday night kickoff because it is probably alienating, you know, three quarters of the country outside of, you know, people within reach of Dublin. But obviously, just so much to look forward to over the course of this week. And what a game of rugby, I suppose, to kick everything off with.
Yeah, I think if you look traditionally at internationals, like if you're playing against New Zealand, South Africa, I know we're not, but like the All Blacks jersey, even like it kind of makes you sit up straighter, doesn't it? It's such a traditional kind of big fixture. And I suppose going back along, we would have felt like we were going in to have a punt and see how we get on, and a lot of fear there. But things have changed and there's a bit of expectation. New Zealand is sitting fourth today. Are they still sitting fourth?
I don't even look at the rankings these days.
Yeah, they don't count, but like they're not. I saw a video and it was kind of chat around how they're not just expected to be by far and away number one in the world anymore, and that kind of aura has gone around New Zealand, isn't it? Now I talk about how they might be getting it back, but it's and they're going to explode at some stage. But you know, even talking to my dad last day, he was like, I just wanted to watch the Haka, you know. And the days of like just seeing the Haka are gone because it's so accessible, isn't it? We see it so many times per year. Before, you have to tune in live and you never see it. So like it's very kind of normal now. But Ireland going into this, I think if you watched England, New Zealand, and we get into that, there's a massive opportunity there. As good as I think New Zealand are and can be, there's a massive opportunity for Ireland to kick on and have a good crack at home against a team like that.
So before we actually get into the match itself and I suppose where it's going to be won and lost, etc., team selection calls, bits like that, let's look at Ireland and what we're hoping to see from them over the course of these next few weeks, because it's a rare four games over this November block. The odd time they've thrown in an extra game before, but that's generally been, you know, we've seen them go off to America and play a bit of an exhibition over there where they played the All Blacks, or they played Italy another time as well. But this is four Dublin games. And four good oppositions as well. There isn't really a gimme in there. Like you've New Zealand, you've Australia at the end of it, who, look, they're not in a particularly great place, but they weren't in a great place when they came over 2 years ago and Ireland just about got away with it on the night. You have Argentina, who on any given day can be arguably like one of the best teams in the world, but they could also be a complete 4 out of 10. You actually just don't know what you're going to have. And then Fiji, who I know were hammered by Scotland last week, but have generally given Ireland a decent enough game. And that's probably the opportunity to rotate the squad around a little bit. And we'll get to see some new combinations and things like that. But I suppose, from your point of view, what are you hoping to see over these next few weeks from an Ireland squad? Which, bear in mind as well, is going to be Andy Farrell's last involvement with this Ireland team until after next summer.
Yeah, I think like even the Fiji game being the gimme in there, like they played Scotland last week and Fiji was struggling the first game because they're not going to be together a lot, you know, and the longer they're together, the more cohesive they get. Obviously, we know the kind of community feel that they have, and all of a sudden there's a brotherhood by the time they come to play Ireland. And that's the one where you'd be hoping Ireland kind of change things. But as we know, they don't really just put out, you know, their A side or their, you know, their second string. So you'd be hoping, and I think it's Andy Farrell's way, and I think it's actually the right way as well. You want to drop fellas into the squad here and there. I know in that game in particular, you probably want to see more changes. And if you're watching the squad from the outside, you want to see a lot of changes. But as you said there, Argentina is probably the one, as a coach, that you get most nervous about, because your players have to get up for the New Zealand game. There's no two ways about it. There has to be fear in the back of your mind there that they will explode into action at some stage, and all the stuff they're trying and maybe not pulling off at the moment, it's going to click. And don't be the team that it clicks against. Australia, I'm not really sure what you're going to get. You know, they're not in a great place. I think Ireland can, if Ireland can't get game time for a Nick Timoney, Cian Prendergast, Cormac Isichukwu inside in the pack against Australia, then what are the four games about? You know what I mean? So I don't think, I know we won't go into selection a while, but like, I don't think you'll see massive change for New Zealand. You know, people will be talking about Peter O'Mahony not being fully ready, maybe. I know he played 40 minutes last weekend and he's joined up with the squad, but if there's an opportunity for him not to be ready for someone else, I don't think you'll just see Cian Prendergast wear six. You know what I mean? We've always had the who's going to play a second row? Is Tadhg Beirne a five or a six? Is Ryan Baird a second row or a six? So between, you know, the usual contenders, you've got James Ryan. Is Joe McCarthy fit?
He is, yeah.
You've got,
Well, according to him, he is.
yeah. There's always say they're fit. They're fit until they're selected or not selected, and then they'll tell you the real story. But you know, like Joe McCarthy, James Ryan, Ian Henderson, Tadhg Beirne, Ryan Baird, you've already got enough guys that want to start there. And you know, whether you see Isichukwu, Cian Prendergast, Nick Timoney coming into the fold against New Zealand, it depends on how they're training behind the scenes, because we've seen this with Andy Farrell before, and you know, that's when Mack Hansen came to life, wasn't it? That they could see how they were going, and we couldn't, obviously. So, but I would be surprised. You know, I would be surprised. Would you be?
I'd be surprised if we see anything out of the norm when the team is announced tomorrow. I think when you see the players who are fit and available there, and as we mentioned as well, it's a long month. There are four games. It's even highly unlikely that Farrell is going to be able to pick the same team next weekend against Argentina. When you just consider the attrition rate of everything, there's going to be knocks over the course of the next few weeks where those games against Fiji and Australia are, you'd assume, are going to be opportunities for fellas to come in, even if it's for injuries or just selection as well. It would be very unlikely for Farrell to be sticking with his absolute best team or for these four games in a row. So I think this weekend against New Zealand, we'll get into it a little bit later, but I think for the most part you can probably pick 90% of the team already, and it's just a couple of one or the others here or there, maybe on the wing or second back row, depending on, as you mentioned, what way you want to do Tadhg Beirne. The other bit I might mention broadly around Ireland before we get to New Zealand is Caelan Dorris is captain now as well, and he's been able to slowly kind of bed himself into this role, starting with a little bit for Leinster at the start of 2024, then covering for O'Mahony for a game during the Six Nations, or filling in later on in games when O'Mahony had gone off, then steps up into it for the second test against South Africa. Now he's taken the role on full time with Leinster, and I think definitely this season for Leinster you can see that he's definitely found a balance between dealing with the extra bits and pieces that come with captaincy and maintaining his performance, which I think is the big thing, because he has come out at the start of this season like a bat out of hell.
He's unbelievable. Do you want me to go on about my love affair for Caelan Dorris? I just think
Go for
he's,
it. Go for it.
well, I just think his every part of his game is so polished. You know, I saw, now I did see a kind of a highlight reel recently on X. I can't even call it X, it's still Twitter to me, but I saw a highlight reel and I was like, where's the offload? You know, I was looking for the offload because he's just so good with his feet. He gets into little spaces, and I think what you get with him from a coaching perspective is such clarity, certainty. You know, it's very easy to build something around him, and he just does his role unbelievably well. Obviously we see like that extra bit of footwork. Now he's not like, he's not Satiti in terms of footwork, he's not Satiti in terms of an offload, he's not many other players in terms of other aspects of his game, but is he just an 8 out of 10 plus? 8 out of 10 is probably as low as he gets on an average, you know. So he's that's what, like, and even like his mentally, I think he seems like he's just very balanced. You know, that captaincy is going to suit him. Like, he doesn't get too high. You know, he doesn't get too aggressive. Even like when he's making big hits, he's just going about his business. You know, so that's the part that I really like about him. He's just a really balanced head. And I don't know, like we've seen James Ryan get into a bit of bother by doing the questioning thing, and I just don't know. Maybe we will, like, but I don't know if he'll ever get into that space where he gets in trouble. You know, he kind of just stands there, hands on his hips, and he's expecting an answer. Like, you know, and I think there's a lot of respect there for him, isn't there? So, but obviously, like, when you see him speaking, when you see him, he plays the game, there's a reason why he's a captain of his province and his country all of a sudden. Like, and you know, you see Leo Cullen bringing, they're doing that quite well, aren't they? Bringing players into their coaching box. I think there's a massive amount of collaboration nowadays. You know, you have to, and I think there always was with captains, but now you have a leadership group, and Leo Cullen is kind of, I don't know if he's changing the game a small bit like that, but I haven't seen it done too often for a player that's of that age. Like, you might see a Johnny Sexton, for example, but you know, Caelan Dorris, James Ryan, obviously very experienced, but like bringing them into the coaching box, all of a sudden there's a massive alignment from the box onto the pitch when the next time they tag out, like, you know.
And I think with Doris as well, there's probably a bit of extra determination just given the way the World Cup went. And I would say he was probably one of those players in the New Zealand game who just, for whatever reason, couldn't probably have the impact he normally had on a big game like that. Like you think back to 2021 when he scored that brilliant try at the Aviva against New Zealand as well. But looking at the World Cup, even like just after Ronan Kelleher gets held up over the line in New Zealand to have the goal line dropout, and like it was just so alien. Caelan Dorris just cat or drops a ball completely unchallenged 40 meters out, and that's the area of the pitch where we normally associate him with being so dangerous. Where you know he's always the man catching that goal line dropout and setting up that attack again. And I'd say there probably was a lot of frustration for him there off the back of that. And I would say this is probably a game he's had penciled in the calendar for a long time.
Yeah, it is, but like, it's funny, you can point to his last mistake nearly, you know, because he doesn't make them, you know, and that was a shocker, to be fair. But he just doesn't make them. But then again, like, New Zealand, they seem to be a very good side at just pointing out the focal point of the opposition, which you should be doing anyway. But it's not a surprise really that he was probably a bit more rattled in that game. Like, New Zealand seemed to have Ireland's number. And if you were playing against Ireland, would you not just, I know it's not, if it was Gaelic football, you put the sweeper on him, like, you know what I mean? You just make sure that when he has the ball, he's doubled up. Like, if someone else gets a soft gap outside him, fair enough. But like, if you can get Caelan Dorris to deck, I think you do a massive bit of damage to Ireland's attack, like.
Let's look at New Zealand then. We got to see them on Saturday afternoon at Twickenham. They won 24-22. Really, really entertaining game. Like, I mean, it was 14, they were 14-12 up at half time, having, I suppose, gifted England 4 penalties, really, through just poor, poor discipline. And then in the third quarter, just couldn't really get a hold on the game. England go 22-14 ahead. And you think the game is really just slipping away from New Zealand. But like they always seem to do, they have some shots left in them. They get back ahead 24-22. Mark Telea's brilliant try down in the corner. Damien McKenzie knocks over it, you know, the most clutch of touchline conversions to put them ahead. And then all of a sudden, it looks like they shoot themselves in the foot. David Havili gets a or was it Anton Leonard Brown gets a yellow card, and he gets a yellow card. England have an opportunity to go down and get the drop goal. And I might even talk to you about the drop goal stuff. It might be the only point on England I might focus on, but just it was such a mad ending to the game, and you being an out half as well. Like George Ford is ultimately the fellow who has to stand there and miss the drop goal. But I would say, and I can tell you I've never played out half, but I would imagine that you are, if you're George Ford, you're not particularly impressed, A, with the setup, where it seemed like the England pack were kind of just were just going about their business waiting for George Ford to hit a drop goal. And B, you're not pleased at all with that pass from Harry Randall.
No, and I think the first thing is that George Ford missed the penalty, because that's so unlike him. I think he's a very reliable kicker. I watched him as a kicker for quite a while, and like, he's just so process oriented. Like, he just looks really good when he's kicking. It's so straight. He just, you know, it's you know, like, we're used to English players. When you see English players underage, they're always more technical than others. Their coaching staff underage, they're always really good. But he just seems to, and it's someone maybe I've seen his kicking coach and all the rest of it. You just don't expect him to miss that at all, you know. And obviously hit the post. But the part that I saw again this morning was the scrum. The scrum really, really, really annoyed me from an out-halves perspective. Like, There's no nine on the scrum from the opposition defence because there's a yellow card. So, like, midfield scrum is the hardest thing in the game to defend as it is. And then when you get onto near the goal line, the 15 has to pick one side or the other. So if you're out the pitch, your 15 can kind of swing both sides, and it's a lot of hard work for them, to be fair. But you'd always say 15 has to get last on both sides, and they have to cover a kick and all sorts. Further in you go, they have to pick a side, and then all of a sudden you lose your nine. So you have to have three and three on your side, like, you know. So the 15 has to flatten up. There's no line coming off the scrum. And actually, if you look back at the scrum, they have to get melted in the scrum anyway, which they'd be disappointed with. And Harry Randall picked and went left with Furbank and Ford, or four, yeah, four, Furbank and Ford both swinging to the left. And he just bottled it a small bit and turned back and then gave a poor pass. I think he got it to Furbank, which meant that they were back along again. They actually ran through that set piece. He'll be on the 5 meter line, and George Ford is getting forwards back to the right and just popping it over. You know, so that's the first thing that I thought was a shocker. It was panic. And then pass. I don't want to go in on Harry Randall, obviously. Like, a nine is a tough position as well. But when you look at the difference in composure with a World Cup winning nine like Matt Dawson, little snipe getting 10 meters closer, Johnny Wilkinson over the bar. This was three levels below that kind of a setup, wasn't it? It just seemed to be
Like
shambolic from start to
he's
finish.
reaching up to catch it, and like even just that little half step extra that you have to take, or half second extra that you have to take, makes such a difference.
Like, it looks like George Ford is really technical in there, as I said. So he's like standing in a certain way to catch the ball. You're trying to create a goal kick out of a drop kick. You know what I mean? You're trying to get it in a certain get catch the ball in a certain place to put it to a certain place. So then you just run through it like a goal kick. That's how you'd be kind of coached on it. Put the ball out far enough in front of you as if it's going to bounce on a tee, and you just connect with it through. Now, I'm talking about it as if I was unbelievable at them. I've kicked a few drop goals. A lot of them were ugly. So it's not a nice place to be. But that's what I mean by George Ford. He's so long in the game and experience. I think he would have loved that situation. You know, that he's the kind of guy that you think of, like, wanting to kick that goal, you know, and missed it off the tee and then got a shocker to. Now, like, to be fair, we've seen Rog kicked one in the Millennium Stadium. I'm not sure what way the pass was, but it was ugly. He got it over there. You want your 10 to get it over. You know, you do. But obviously, if you don't get the right delivery, it's gonna be ugly at best, like.
The All Blacks then, it's funny analyzing them because you can kind of spin it either way depending on how optimistic you are about Ireland or pessimistic you are about Ireland. Because on one hand you could kind of say that they won the game, but they didn't really trouble England for so much of their phase play. But then on the flip side, you could kind of say, well, they scored three tries, and you could say like the only time they looked dangerous or scored their tries was it was moments of individual brilliance, which is stuff we've always associated with New Zealand and stuff that you've always had to be wary for. But then if you were pessimistic about Ireland, you would say that, well, New Zealand weren't great in their phase play, but that individual brilliance is as good as it ever was. So it is one of those things where you can, depending on what your mindset is, you can happily sit into either camp.
Yeah, but I think the fact that their phase play is quite poor at the moment, I wouldn't be a fan of it. But that England side are good. I don't think, like, I know you think, like, Borthwick side kicking the ball, negative tactics, taking Smith off. You can talk about all that, but, like, if there was a World Cup in the morning, you'd fear for your life because they're going to win it. You know, that's the way they are. Like, they
Because
play the
they
right
really
rugby.
ha like I know we like They made so many errors on it early on in the Six Nations, but they have that defense down now, and they're putting teams under so much pressure.
Yeah, they do. Like, I mean, if there's like Six Nations, they'll be up there. You know, if there was a World Cup, like I said, they'd be up there. Like, they're a good side, and to beat them in Twickenham, you know, can't go understated. And people will. I've seen kind of reports of like two poor enough test teams going at it. Stop. Like, you go into Twickenham. Like, I've analysed teams before, not at that level, and you kind of go, oh, they're not great. We'll get at this and we'll get at that. The reality of doing it on the pitch is very, very different. So, like, watching England thinking there's opportunities there, they squeeze the life out of you. And there's a reason why New Zealand didn't come across that well. But also, a lot of it is in their own control. If you have a pot of forward, three forwards, and your 10 isn't swinging in around the back of it, that's just going to be eaten alive, like, you know. So England are putting big shots on, and there's no surprise why they were, or New Zealand weren't really going anywhere. There was one example, can't remember who it was, but they were Rathmann was trying to, it was actually the intercept from Smith, and they were trying to play to the left, and a forward just didn't really make a decision, so they just kind of tagged onto the ruck and got in the way of the pass. So Rathmann had to get out of it and throw the pass behind them, and that's enough time for Smith to get off the line and take the ball out of the air. Now, it's still a poor decision, or it's poor delivery, but it's just that disconnect that it makes a forward like, I'm not going to make a decision here, which is unlike New Zealand forward. Someone's going to join the ruck, you know, and that kind of stuff is just so unlike them. But at the same time, there's enough in their game. Like you said, the individual brilliance, even going down the short side and having Jordan duck under Beauden Barrett, like it's just such good play. And then you have Satiti and some of the stuff that he was doing, the offload. Even the fact that when McKenzie got the ball to Jordan to Talia for the winning try, like it's so composed, just reading the tackle line, taking your time, waiting for them to jump out and just delivering it. And like that's what we know of New Zealand rugby. Like their skills in the basic stuff are so good. But then I'm wondering why the shape, the phase play, I don't know why they're not connected as backs and forwards. That kind of stuff would kill you. But it's the offload for me is the part that they're going to make or break their game with. So if they, I think it'll be too early for them to really come to life. I hope I'm right with that. But I think it'll be too early to put 40 points on the scoreboard. But at the same time, they're a matter of moments away from it. Like the Will Jordan knock on in his own 22 was one of the moments that I kind of focused on. It's just unlike them. Like, you know, it wasn't a knock on, it was a forward pass. They had a couple of offloads that were a bit speculative. There was one to Roygaard in traffic, and I think he knocked it on. Once they start sticking, or once that decision gets better, their attack is going to put someone under fierce pressure. Like,
Yeah, and that, like you said that in your weekly column there on RT Sport this morning, that, like, you know, while you're not really seeing anything spectacular out of it at the moment, and it's all a little bit clunky, that, like, we're starting year two of a World Cup cycle, and when that does click, they're going to be absolutely lethal, and they're going to be causing teams all sorts of chaos. Particularly then when you add in the finishers, they actually have, like, Mark Talia, Will Jordan, Caleb Clark. Like, there's phenomenal players there. The big change, obviously, this week is going to be, we presume Damian McKenzie will be starting at out half. Beauden Barrett is out with a concussion. Does that change your perception of them in any way? Like, I know you were talking about in your column as well how Beauden Barrett, he was, you know, he was testing England out with a couple of with a lot of kicking early on into that little kick space behind the defensive line, and, you know, mixed results out of it. Would you expect McKenzie to be doing just as much of that? Will he be trying to open Ireland up in a little different way?
I'd say they play similarly. I think tactics are clearly the same. They just do things differently. I think, you know, Beauden Barrett's kicking game, he doesn't look like a very fluid kicker. You know, even off the tee, I think we've all known that his tee rolls 20 meters every time he kicks off it. Like, you know, he's just, there's a very awkward kind of straightness about him. But then
His
I've
tee,
written him
his,
like,
sorry, explain, his tee rolls.
you nearly see, don't worry, I've kicked my tee plenty of times. When your timing is out and things get awkward, you nearly see the tee moving with it. Like, you know, I see Beauden Barrett just seems kind of very awkwardly straight. And I think his kicking is something that has stopped him from being the out and out 10, like, isn't it?
Right.
Sometimes it will get to you that he just has a little hook or. Now, I'm not Beauden Barrett and I'm not an All Black, by the way. But as far as All Blacks go, you're used to Dan Carter stroking through. His kicking is just awkward, like, you know. And even Damian McKenzie's one off the touchline the last day was just so fluid. But Beauden Barrett had the first conversion was something as well, like, you know. So there, he's well able to do it. It's just his consistency seems a little bit funny. But then, like, I think it's understated how fit he is. His execution in the moment, he, you know, some of his chips over the top, and then there was one where didn't they turn over? They turned over a line out. I had a note there that he had a poor kick or something. The next thing they got the ball back and he lashed it long into space. And it was such a good little awkward kick, you know, that there are things that you can't really quantify, but when he's playing, you see that they get territory and their kicking game. Even at the start, his crossfield kicks both sides. Like that's something you see with New Zealand. Where there's space, kick the ball over there, get it back, kick it back over there. The defense is just running all over the pitch, like, you know. So he's very good. But Damian McKenzie is that in his game as well. He has all that as well. So I don't think they get weaker depending on who they need to start. But I think when someone like Beauden Barrett gets injured, then your bench gets weaker, obviously. And that's the part where Damian McKenzie came on and had a very good impact off the bench. So I don't think their starting team is going to get any weaker. I've seen kind of comments around Damian McKenzie maybe not being an out and out 10 and not controlling the game very well. Maybe it's just because I love watching him play. He's just so good. He goes a bit more lateral, I think, but that's a bit of creativity in there as well, isn't there?
Would you
But
have a gut feeling, like, if if someone put an All Blacks team sheet in front of you to play Ireland, and one said Beauden Barrett, one said Damian McKenzie at 10, which one would your stomach be churning a little bit more reading? Which one would you be a little bit more intimidated by?
I don't know. I think when you're a coach and you're just going, one of them is playing anyway. You know, they're
Right.
both unbelievable. So I'm watching a cat walk into my shed, which isn't what I want. So he's going to get locked in there. I don't think you. I don't think you really pay too much attention because they're both unbelievable. Now I do think that Beauden Barrett, possibly, correct me if I'm wrong, but does he have more individual moments? Like you just see him crossing the line a small bit more. Like McKenzie has it as well, but is the finished product really with Beauden Barrett? Even the fact that he swung around the short side and Will Jordan worked off him so well, maybe Beauden Barrett, but I think that's a toss of a coin, is it?
Yeah, I would say so as well. Although to be honest, I would say maybe if more often than not, if Damian McKenzie is starting at 10, you probably have Beauden Barrett somewhere else in the match day squad, or vice versa as well.
You said it yourself there. If even if like if Beauden Barrett went to 15, I think New Zealand are weaker because Will Jordan is
Yeah.
disgracefully effective, and Caleb Clark such a strong runner. Mark Talay is one of those guys that people don't probably respect enough. He gets out of so much contact. He actually gets the ball in the air quite a bit as well.
Well,
He's
look at the like his second try. He had
yeah.
absolutely no right to score that try from where he did. And that just goes back to, as we were saying at the start, while the attack is a little bit clunky at times, you just give them half a yard of extra space that you might give to any other team in the world, and you will get punished. And that probably it kind of brings me along to the next thing I wanted to ask was, from a defensive point of view and a coaching point of view, how do you defend against just those X factor moments, those pieces of individual brilliance? Is there something you can do to limit the amount of times that a team can kind of fall back on those, a brilliant Wallace Atiti offload that puts Talia down the wing, or Talia just somehow shaking off three players in a phone box to score down in the corner?
I think like the first thing is you have to make no assumptions in the tackle line because when New Zealand are so good at the basics, you can't give them little cracks. You know what I mean? So if you're looking after your own self in your own system and putting that against them, it's when people try to overcorrect things or overdo things, they'll just pick off an inside shoulder or they'll pick off a soft shoulder somewhere. So trying to stay more connected on that and not making assumptions would like this kind of hitting on suspicion stuff. Don't do that because they'll just slip it to the next person. Like, I think that example of the Mark Talia try, it's out of nothing. Like, they're numbered up. You know, the defensive coaches won't be happy with that moment. Like, but obviously, you said it yourself. It's just individual brilliance, or it's very good individuals putting it together. But like Wallace Satiti with that offload, obviously, you try to put a bounty on him. I think they'll have to put a bounty on him this weekend. And you know, when he has the ball, you hit him low, you hit him high, as in. Wrap the ball up, and you have to give him that respect. But then, if you give him too much respect, Ardie Sabea's throwing his wild offload and post contact meters, and they get on the front foot. So, yeah, I think
And chipping over the top as well, Ardie Sevilla, based on last week.
that's not his first one either, which is mad. Because I was like, when I saw it, I think like, I've seen that before, and then I saw someone else bring it up. In fairness, so I was like, yeah, I've definitely seen that before off the left foot. It was actually such good execution as well. I was writing a few bits down when I was watching the match, and I was like, it's a big kicking game. Like New Zealand kicked the ball a lot. Like I know we've spoken about it a bit, but like people don't give respect to like how much the ball needs to be kicked in international rugby. France kick it a lot, and New Zealand and England do as well. Obviously, New Zealand's game and England's game look very different, even with those kicking games. But I'd written a note at one stage. Maro Itoje kicked, maybe not a structured kick, but Ardie Sebea kicked a structured one, pre-planned. It was kicking all over the pitch, you know. So it's you can't make any assumptions. Even someone like Ardie Sevilla, he's got a wild off or wild dummy, and then he adds a bit of a kick to his game as well. Like, how are you supposed to defend that?
Oh,
Hopefully, you're.
I love that Ardie Sevilla dummy. The really exaggerated double-handed, and it always seems to work. It's fantastic. We've obviously mentioned him, but before we move on to Ireland, I do want to kind of just focus in on Wallace Atiti, who is probably emerging now as like probably the breakthrough player of the year in international rugby this season. Certainly right up there, like seven caps, still 22 years old. All of those caps coming since this summer. But on Saturday, 16 carries, 9 tackles, 9 passes, 4 offloads, 3 line breaks, 3 defenders beat, 1 turnover, 1 as well, and obviously setting up the Mark Talia try with one of those offloads as well. Just looks a complete player.
Yeah, he's just so hard to stop, like, isn't he? He's got all the components. He's actually rapid, is he? Like,
Yeah,
he
could be a winger, I'd say, if he wanted to.
look, he looks rapid. Like, I don't know, we really don't know their numbers, and there's a perception when you're watching the game, but there was the one where the breakout was there a bit of unstructured play, and he threw a dummy and went through. It was actually Voy that he tried to pass the ball to, and it was a forward, but that's a try, you know, like he could have created another try, and that's just individual. It's not anything to do with what New Zealand created. Now you see Voy in the line waiting for him, and he turns and goes with him. Like, there's obviously cues, and there's a way to train, and once he sees him getting on the ball, he's not retreating because he knows he's going to come to him. Now, technically not retreating is a penalty, but he's kind of waiting around, just about jogging back, waiting to turn around for him. That's nearly, it's as good as a try created. So if you're Scott Robertson and you're looking at the game and some of their attacks struggled, you'd be like, that's a try scoring opportunity. And I'm sure there was others that you're like, we're in a good place, you know, but someone like him being able to break up the game is exactly what you expect from New Zealand with individual brilliance. They probably haven't had the same forward excitement, have they? Ardie Sevea, obviously, but you know, Sam Kane goes in and does his job. Barrett is in there disrupting everything, being an absolute nuisance. Their hookers can get going at times, but someone like him, you know, it's time to get another big, what would you call it, superstar Kiwi back row into the mix. I think it's
and like they're kind of in that, they're in a transition period as well, I think, when it comes to the forwards, where they've obviously had some high profile retirements and players either taking sabbaticals or just been injured and unavailable. So there is a bit of a turnover going on there. So I think over the next couple of seasons, we're probably going to see a lot more of him and probably a couple of other names putting their hands up as well. On the Ireland team, going to be named tomorrow at 2 p.m. We kind of said it earlier on, 90% of it we could probably predict already. But there are a couple of calls to be made in there. One of them, and we kind of flagged it initially, was, where does Tadhg Byrne play? Is it going to be Joe McCarthy and Tadhg Byrne in the second row with a back row of Caelan Darris, Van der Fleer, and one of Peter O'Mahony, Nick Timoney, Cormac Isichuku, Cian Prendergast, Ryan Baird, take your pick in there? Or is it a Joe McCarthy and James Ryan second row with Tadhg Byrne at six to complement Van der Fleer or Caelan Darris? What way would you be leaning there?
McCarthy and Ryan probably, and then Tadhg Byrne at six is probably what I think they'll do. I think that's what they'll do. What do you think?
I think they will do that. I would have been very confident up until Saturday they'd do that. But watching Munster on Saturday, Peter O'Mahony looks up for it. Yeah. I mean, it was just a reminder that he's still so capable of setting that physical and emotional tone of a game. And maybe you still have him on the bench and have him involved. I would have been very, like, up until last Saturday, I would have been very surprised if O'Mahony was involved this weekend, just because he's played so little rugby this season. But seeing how sharp he was on Saturday, I would be, at the very least, I would be trying to get him into the matchday squad. I would probably still just about lean towards having Byrne as your starting six at the weekend. But O'Mahony's given me food for thought in the last few days. I just thought, just in terms of attitude and tone setting, he was such an important player on Saturday, even for 40 minutes.
I think Pete's one of those guys that doesn't need to play a lot of rugby, does he? Yeah. Like, at this stage of his career, he's very, well, I don't know, do they give him credit for it or not, but he's a very astute rugby player. Like, he's very intelligent around small details of the game. And that's why coaches like him. Like, Andy Farrell has a thing for Peter O'Mahony, doesn't he? Like, clearly. So, you know, I just don't know, is Pete the kind of guy to bring off the bench? I think you start him if you're going to play him. That's my... Now, I don't like bench players, impact players. I think it's not fair. You know, if a guy is... I know the game is a bit different now, but if a guy is good enough to start, he just starts. You don't hold a guy back because he's a great impact player, from me anyway, from my perspective. So I think if Pete is ready to go, Will he start? And then you get, I'd like to, you've seen James Ryan come off the bench. You've seen some of the other kind of back fives come off the bench.
Yeah.
I'd be unsure if Pete's the kind of guy to come off the bench or if he just sets the tone early, empties it, and gets off, you know. But that depends again on what we can't see behind the scenes, how he rocks up in Portugal, how he trains. I don't have any question around how he'll do that. But like we said earlier, I don't think you'll see massive changes or just not going to be no experimentation. I think it's the right wing is probably one that's up for grabs, is it?
Yeah, that was the other one I was gonna bring up. So Calvin Ashe has obviously fitted in seamlessly while Mac Hansen was unavailable during 2024. But then on the flip side, you probably just have Mac Hansen obviously has credit in the bank with Andy Farrell, and that seems to stand for a lot when it comes to Farrell. He's a very loyal selector, I think a lot of people would say. You could absolutely make the case for either of them. Maybe I'd be leaning that Mac Hansen is capable of just creating a little bit more out of the blue and just sparking something, which isn't a slight against Calvin Nash in any way.
Yeah, I watched Mac Hansen a couple of games back with Connacht, and I felt like he was a bit off. I just felt it was a bit loose, and you know, maybe he's coming back, been out of the game for so long, and just wanting to enjoy himself. But I felt like it was a small bit loose, and that same looseness is what got it. It got him on the team. You know, it's not because it wasn't loose. It was,
Looseness can be a good and a bad thing depending on the day of the week. Like, yeah.
depends on how he controls it and how Andy Farrell harnesses that and how he understands his role to be and how close that selection competition is. You know what I mean? And obviously we saw him create opportunities and moments of magic, you know. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? But I don't think he plays like that with Ireland, and he doesn't generally play like that anyway. I know there was a turnover. Which game was it? One of the Welsh games, I think there was a turnover which he just didn't need to carry back. He just kind of got bored in the kick battle and just carried, and he got turned over with a kick at goal, and he just didn't need to do it, like, you know. But other than that, to be fair to him, you know, he actually does make a lot of good decisions, and he causes defenses a lot of upset. And if you look at New Zealand's defense at the moment, they don't really know where they're at. I think that's one of the things I like. England's attack isn't something that's going to cause you massive trouble from a decision-making perspective. They are strong. They know what they're doing. They even at the start of the game, they had an overthrow, purposeful overthrow, and they had like a boot. And I was like, "Jeez, that's unlike them. They're throwing their punches here at the start." But they didn't do that for the rest of the game. When Smith was coming around the corner, getting kind of a sweep off their first pad, and there was two more forwards running off Smith, New Zealand started hitting everything. I was like, "This is four penalties, I think, for hitting fellas off the ball." And it was the yellow card in the end, was it? So four penalties on that, and I was like, that's just defensive madness, like, you know. So if you're going to do that against England, what are you going to do against Ireland when they throw a bit more at you with the likes of Mac Hansen able to kind of get out of fade or a step away from you, and then someone else running off him? So he'll cause loads of damage. The thing I like about Calvin Ashe again is like the certainty. Obviously his footwork is incredible. The speed is what gets him away. We've seen him score in South Africa. He's a finisher, you know. I think he's a very diligent fella. He probably hasn't had the moments that Mac Hansen has had. Well, he hasn't had them as much in an Irish jersey, but at the same time, again, you can understand why someone like Farrell likes him, because you know where he's going to be. He's very technical on his lines of running. He takes a lot of pride in where he shows up and everything else, you know. So that'll be an interesting one for me.
Yeah, and do you know, in fact, as you were talking there, like you kind of said, Calvin Ashe, he probably hasn't had the same kind of moments that Mac Hansen has, but I suppose he's never actually been that player. And you know, if he had gone out in the last whatever 11 months in an Ireland shirt and tried to be Mac Hansen, he probably wouldn't still be in the team because that's just not his game whatsoever. And he's gone in there and he has done the things that he is good at doing. And who knows? I mentioned Andy Farrell being loyal. He could show Calvin Nash loyalty for how well he's played over these 11 months and make Mac Hansen work his way back into the team. So, look, we'll find
Yeah,
that
and
out tomorrow.
I think the thing about Calvin Ashe is like he was a star schools player, like, you know, he wasn't just this
Oh,
solid.
Johnny, tell me about it. I was covering Munster Schools rugby. That was when I was just coming out of college. It would have been like my first year at home freelancing. And I bought my stock in Calvin Nash very, very early, I'll tell you now. And
Pitching to the
I've,
converters.
yeah, it's all started to become worth it now in the last couple of years. I had that stock nice and early.
Yeah, but like I think, you know, when you see him, it takes time. Like even Jack Crowley at this stage, I know, you know, I talk with Jack a bit, but like it's probably, I've been speaking to him, but I know it's time, like that he brings his own game now. Like he's been facilitating a lot, and he's a full-blown international now. Like I think you'll see him. We saw it in which game was I watching? The Sharks game. He had a little bit of a half break and an offload. We'll see more of that in his game with more kind of experience and more caps. I think Calvin Ash is someone who's similar. You know, I think you'll see the moment if you keep playing him. You'll see those moments come through. It just takes some players time. Obviously, Mac Hansen is a different breed. You'll see it on game one. You know, but guys like Calvin Ash, if you stick with them, you'll get a long-term international with moments out of them, you know. And obviously there's Munster bias in that, I understand that. You can say that about players all over the place. I think you could say the same thing about Izichukwu, and actually Cian Prendergast is a guy that I have a lot of time for. I think if those two guys could get 10 games, I know that's generous, but if they get 10 games, you'd get another long-term international, two of them, you know. So that's the, when you said earlier on, like, what are you expecting out of the next couple of weeks? You'd hope that there's a nice blend of getting these guys into games, because even like, you know, Wallace Satisi, 7 caps all of a sudden, or when you look at guys and all of a sudden they have 10 caps, like Calvin has them, all of a sudden they're just internationals that you can pick from and you've built your squad. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it will. Last couple of points then. You mentioned Jack Crowley. How much do you think Crowley, plus Frawley and Sam Prendergast, are going to benefit from even just the small little interactions and, you know, the part-time role that Johnny Sexton's going to have in the squad?
I would like Johnny Sexton, like someone who can just tell them, you know, when they have questions. There's only so much you can kind of ask Andy Farrell, I suppose, without second guessing yourself that you're giving your weaknesses away, you know, when you're talking to your head coach or even like your attack coach or your unit coaches. You'll be asking them questions all the time. But like Johnny Sexton, someone who's just going to sit with the out halves, I'd imagine, and just is too much stock in that position and obviously way too much experience. He would have been helping those guys anyway. So like that's unbelievable for them to have an individual coach, you know. The out half battle is interesting because as much as, you know, I talk about Jack Crowley, he's Kieran Frawley, a
His
guy
breathing is breathing down his neck.
I've said it before, but like when Kieran Frawley got injured, was that around the New Zealand tour and those Maori the midweek games? He was in full control. Like Jack came after that, you know. So Kieran Frawley is a very talented player, and it depends on what kind of luck he has and where training is going, but you'll see a lot of him in over the course of the four games.
Yeah, and I'd say we're going to be talking about that head-to-head battle quite a bit over the next few weeks as well. That's it on the Ireland stuff. Very quickly, I might just finish on Munster at the weekend, beaten 38-24 by the All Blacks 15 at Thomond Park. Just like, I think after the week that was, it was probably a very cathartic experience for a lot of the Munster players to get out there and just enjoy a good occasion at Thomond Park. After what was probably a very stressful and unenjoyable few days. Relief for Ian Costello, I would say that they can now put matches in the rearview mirror for a few weeks and just get off into the shadows and go about their business and, you know, start the head coach recruitment process and all that. But one thing I think that jumped out to me being at Thomond on Saturday was, in terms of the occasion, it was a reminder, a very, very big reminder that in spite of the fact that Munster don't have the budget of a Leinster or some of the big French teams anymore. And while they might not be at that level in terms of competitiveness, of, you know, in terms of Champions Cup anymore, it was a massive reminder that Munster rugby is still, brand Munster is still as big as any club side in the world. Because that was a huge occasion at Thomond on Saturday. It was 26 plus, you know, it was a sold out stadium. The atmosphere before the game, during the game, I thought was absolutely brilliant. There was a real buzz and an energy there. The pre-match spectacle was very, very good. If you're a potential Munster head coach and you're looking on at that, there's, you know, it was a nice little advertisement to be able to show to a potential future head coach.
Yeah, like I think the thing about Munster is the appetite is like the community there and all the rest of it, the appetite around the place. Like you see that in the arguments for why isn't it in Barkingquean? Because Cork people just want it to be here. You know, they want to go and support it. You can put it in Limerick or Cork or anywhere, and I think you'd fill the place, you know, and that's the probably the greatest part of the Munster brand, as you said. Like it's heavily backed. Like it's just so ingrained in the people that even when the complaints come, and there were complaints at the weekend, and there were obviously complaints last week as well. When the complaints come, you have to remind yourself that it's because they want better for the club, like, you know, and the bits and pieces going on in the background, obviously. But like they have a bit of an unfair advantage. So I don't know what the way the setup is in terms of getting those touring sides, but they have a USP, I suppose, as a brand that they get these things in. And it's been like Crusaders last year, South Africa the year before. I was at the Maori game in 2016 when Darren Sweetenham had a foot race with a current Irish international and scored his try. But like they're very special games, and I don't think you realize it. It's easy to be on the outside and be like, ah, another exhibition game, but the players really buy into it as well. You know, there's a it's a it is a good moment for them, you know. And you said it there, I think like 4 weeks without a competitive game without points being earned or lost, you know, they got a freebie of getting their side back together or kind of having a practice run with Cozzy and different coaches doing different roles. But it's definitely time to disappear into the shadows for 2 weeks, I think, and take a breath before they have to come back out into the open in maybe 3 weeks' time or so. And tackle it again, because there's a busy period coming before Christmas time, and it's not going to get any easier for them in the background, I would think. There's as much as people want to support them and the appetite is there's a lot of questions being asked, and I think there's not enough clarity on what happened, obviously, but that's not our business. And I think I'd have a lot of respect for whatever happened in the background, but you know, people do want answers, and it's probably their right as well to know what's going on in the club, that they support the way they did at the weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be excuse me, an interesting few weeks ahead. Johnny, thanks a million. You're off to Cork On, off to Armagh on Saturday, am I right in saying?
Absolutely, making the
Big road
trip.
trip. What time in the morning will you be getting up there, or is it a Friday night job?
Friday afternoon, we'll get on the road and hopefully take in some of the Irish match when we get up there with a bit of dinner. But that is, it's like, I think there's a thing in the IL, there's a rite of passage going on your away trips up the north. As much as they're a bit of a trek, you know, it's part of the game, which is, you know, it's a tradition. So we better get on the road and get together. But we have our own need for a win, so
Yeah.
we'll see if we can do that.
The bus trips home are more of a tradition than the bus trips up, I always would have thought, particularly if you get 4 or 5 points, 4 or 5 points on the road.
If you go up, you have to come home. Like, but don't worry, I'll be coming home to family and doing as much video as I can on the bus to free up a Sunday. So it'll be a long enough 2 days as it is.
Very good, Johnny. Listen, thanks a million for joining us. A reminder to everyone else listening as well, we will be back for another podcast on Thursday morning. We're hoping to get it recorded nice and early. Reaction to the team news that'll be confirmed on Wednesday, and looking in a little bit more detail on Ireland and New Zealand on Friday night. So we'll speak to you then.